And we are live for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. How are you doing today, Seth?
I'm good.
All right, coming us from sunny Florida. Lucky you. Hmm. It's still snowing out here. It's crazy. It's April already. All right, we have plenty of news to discuss this week. We're going to start about what just came out today, which is the Tesla Q1 2021 delivery and production numbers. And pleasantly surprised by it, and I think the market would be, but of course it is closed today for Easter, and so we don't know exactly how it would have reacted, but my guess it would have been pretty good, because Tesla announced that they delivered almost 185,000 vehicles and produced 180,000. So they managed to work through a little bit of inventory through this quarter, which is pretty good. We know that they basically what they were doing for the Model S and X, because in January they stopped production, and they, because Tesla actually reported having produced no Model S and X at all this quarter.
Even though that's kind of crazy.
We know that they produced a few of the refresh ones, but I guess they're not considered production version. Maybe they still consider test vehicle or prototype. So I guess that's why they didn't report any, but they still delivered 2,000 of them. So that was what we reported in January when they were liquidating their inventory of those vehicles in preparation for the refresh. So yeah, so what's very significant here is Tesla. Not only we knew that they were going to beat the previous Q1 record, which was achieved last year at 88,000 units. Of course. The Q1 2021 was a bit affected by the start of the pandemic. So it was easier to beat, but let's say Tesla would have achieved 100,000 deliveries, normally without that problem. We were still expecting them to beat that. By how much though, that was the real big question, because Tesla has faced some issue in Q1 too. There was the part supply issue, which a lot of people have speculated was related to the chip shortage. That resulted in a factory shutdown for a few days. And even though it's just a few days, factories don't get back up like that. Like, it takes a little while to ramp back up. So that likely affected production to a degree. Then, of course, Model S and X, the refresh retooling took a lot longer than Tesla expected. And Tesla sits at just 2,000 deliveries in new production. So all those things that affected Tesla's result, they still managed not only to beat last Q1 record, but also beat their overall all-time record, which was achieved just last quarter. That alone is impressive, because there's generally a decline, just a seasonal decline between Q4 and Q1. So not only no seasonal decline, a slight uptick by 2%. So very significant as a whole. Because now, if you take, you have to assume, and my assumption is that the Model Y in China contributed heavily in the quarter, and contributed in March, because we already have the number from January and February, and I think those put together are fewer than 6,000 units or something like that. So it had to have been a big production ramp up at Gigafactory Shanghai for the Model Y in March. So that compensated for the Model S and X and the production shutdown of the factory last month. But the way I see it is now if Tesla in Q2, if we look forward to Q2, Tesla, if Tesla can maintain or even improve on the March production rate of the Model Y, which I expect was high, and then you had a few Model S and X to that mix. Certainly more than 2,000, I would expect. I don't know how much, it's hard to tell, because the ramp up is always super difficult. But if just adding those two together, I would expect Tesla to easily deliver over 200,000 cars during this quarter. What do you think, Seth?
Yeah, I mean, it seems kind of like almost like a no-brainer. I mean, they mm-hmm. like with the Model S and X alone, they're going to get over 200,000.
I feel like the Model Y in China will be contributing more. Like maybe not, but like S and X, if it took them so long to like get things started with the new production, I don't know how much they can do in 3 months. I'm sure they can do more than 2,000 deliveries like they did last quarter, but I don't know how many.
I mean, it's basically they're going to sell everything they can make. Sounds like.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, they've been taking orders for it for the last 2.5 months at this point. So
yeah, but you got Model Y in China, Model S and X all over the world. To me, it seems like 250 is pretty attainable.
250? Oh boy. Okay. All right. Very optimistic, I think, but I like it. 250 in Q2. I mean, I'm sure they can get over 250 in Q3 and Q4, especially if Berlin has already started production in Q3. Yeah, I mean, it's not impossible. I mean, a lot of people are aiming for that million deliveries in 2021, and it would need to be a ramp up in the second half. But if with 185 this quarter, if they get a 250, I mean, I think it's in the pocket at that point.
Right.
But like I said, I think 250 might be a bit optimistic for this quarter. What else is going into production? The Tesla Semi. So we had a little scoopy scoop this week. And so in the past few weeks, we there's been sort of like a bit of a question around what's happening with the Tesla Semi because of a bunch of somewhat vague comments from Elon saying that the two battery cell constraint to make the Tesla Semi, because we know that the new Tesla Semi is going to be equipped with the 4680 cells, and Tesla is still ramping that up. And the most recent comment is that it's probably going to be okay next year, but they are cell constrained this year. But so we didn't even know if there's going to be any production of the Tesla Semi this year, like Tesla has been talking about before. Jérôme Guillen, who's now president of Tesla EV Trucking, specifically said that there would be some customer deliveries this year and some production this year. But now with the recent comments, we're like, that's all unclear. But we had sources and reliable sources that confirmed that Tesla is currently at the moment setting up a new production line for the Tesla Semi at this new building, well, relatively new building here, in the same industrial park as, the Gigafactory. On this picture here, Gigafactory is like on more this way. But yeah, if you remember last year, Electrek was first to report that Tesla was taking over that building, which is the more recent of the four buildings that you see here that are all like warehouse type of buildings. Tesla already has some operation in that building that they use as a warehouse. I don't think they have the whole building too. I think somebody else has this side of the building. But Tesla took over the lease for this new one that was added last year. And back then we heard that it might have something to do with the Tesla Semi, the reason why Tesla took over the building, but we couldn't confirm it. But now we have sources that confirm it, that production equipment is now being installed to build a new Tesla Semi production line, not a full-scale production line. They're talking right now aiming for five Tesla Semi electric trucks. There's five Tesla Semi electric trucks per week. Which is not huge, but it's still pretty significant. Like, let's say that they can start production during the second half of the year. Even let's just say that just the fourth quarter of the year, they can ramp up to 5 units per week. That's still like up to 60 trucks that Tesla can produce in 2021, which is more than I would have thought. And it's more than I think a lot of people would too. But yeah, 60... 60 units at this point, I think, is not unachievable for Tesla. And then the big difference, too, is when they start delivering those, they can actually give them to customer and have real, especially the customer that have large fleet. And I think that's what Tesla is going to go for at first. They're going to go with the customer that placed the largest orders for them and everything. And for example, Pepsi ordered 100 trucks. And they said that they were expecting like 15 this year. They said that last week. So you give them those 15. Pepsi can get some experience with the truck, run some actual numbers on real world operation of an all electric vehicle. And then we know that Pepsi has a lot more than 100 trucks in their fleet. I mean, I'm sure it's in the thousands in the US alone. So they start running the numbers and maybe like that convinced them to convert the whole fleet to electric vehicles. I can certainly see a scenario like that happening. But yeah, the source also confirmed that the plan is still to make the Tesla Semi, or at least the full scale production line of the Tesla Semi, in Austin, Gigafactory, Texas. So that production line is going to be very helpful for them, not just to produce a few trucks, but also to gain some experience producing them in order to build a more efficient large scale production line in Austin in Texas. Speaking of Gigafactory Austin in Texas, Tesla this week added hundreds of new jobs at the site. A lot of them having to do with battery cell production. So we know that Tesla plans to have a battery cell factory adjacent to the Cybertruck Model Y, Model 3 factory. But now it's becoming a lot more real with a lot of jobs. There were like over 100 jobs added this week, but a significant number of them were linked to that factory, mostly to do with engineering. So it's not to the degree of like production employees just yet, but still to set up the factory, Tesla is hiring in greater number at this point. And then after we posted our report on that, Elon ended up commenting on the hiring effort at Gigafactory Texas, saying that he sees Tesla in over the next year alone employing over 10,000 people at the factory, which sounds a bit ambitious. I mean, recruiting 1,000 people is hard. Recruiting 10,000 people, that's something else. I mean, at Electrek here, we have a hard time when we hire one or two people. I cannot imagine trying to coordinate hiring like 10,000 of them.
Yeah, Austin's got a lot of tech people, but that's still a big... still a big number. You know, Austin's like a big city. It's not going to be impossible. I think Reno is a much smaller city to hire from. So,
and then Tesla did it. I mean, they have, I think, over 10,000 employees now. I mean, at least with Panasonic at that plant. So yeah, that's a good point. But over a year though, over a year, by the end of next year, that's the crazy part, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, and also 10,000 people. We didn't even know that Tesla would need 10,000 people at the factory. Previously, in the deal to get the plant started, they were talking about 5,000 employees. So that's twice as many. But we know that Tesla has like big plans for the factory. We just discussed the Tesla Semi. There's the Tesla Cybertruck too. There's Model Y and Model 3 production will happen there. So and the battery cells. So this is just. There's no other factory that's going to have that scale other than maybe Berlin and eventually Shanghai, though Shanghai seems to be more gradual in terms of Tesla just adding capacity there. So, yeah, something to keep an eye on. And I mean, Tesla at the end of last year had over 70,000 employees. So, I mean, with Berlin, Texas, Shanghai growing and just the overall like infrastructure that needs to be built around it with all the service center, the stores and everything. I mean, by the end of next year, I wouldn't be surprised to see Tesla at like over 100,000 employees, which is kind of amazing. 100,000 people just working toward that goal of accelerating electric transportation. And little interesting tidbits for the people that are in Austin or in Texas or anywhere, but they would be interested of working for Tesla there. Tesla Director of Recruiting and Workforce Development, Chris Riley, said to the Austin Business Journal that they made a few deals with local schools, community colleges, and high school. And their goal is to take people that just graduated high school and give them a job at Tesla while continuing their education at some of those local colleges, which I think is an interesting opportunity for people.
Yeah, for sure.
Because especially if you're someone who doesn't really know what they want to do, what they would want to study out of high school, which is not uncommon. I think it's even most people probably don't know exactly what they want to do. It might be a good idea not to get yourself in debt with some doubt on what you want to study and instead take a job and further your education that way while not going into debt. I think that's generally a good plan, even if it's not with Tesla. All right, still about Tesla. We have just a few more items about them. The price of the solar roof changed a lot higher this week. We got a few tips about it from people like, hey, I'm getting different quotes now from the same project and it's a lot more expensive. So I started looking into it and Tesla updated the online configurator. So They audited the pricing for sure, but they also added a factor of roof complexity. And Tesla can detect the roof complexity through like Google Earth or something, an actual like a satellite image of your roof, but not all the time. And so you can change that by just changing the roof complexity from simple to moderate to complex, which is all the different pitches on your roof. And that would be harder to actually lay down the tiles on them and having more custom made tiles for your roof instead of just like a few normal pitches, like four corners or something, four sides. And so I've been using this quote, this specific house with a specific square footage on the roof, that to compare quotes over the years to see how the price of the solar roof is evolving. And this is on a 3,947 square foot roof in California. And last summer, when Tesla last changed the price, I was quoted $55,000 before incentive. This time, same house, same square footage and everything, I'm getting quotes again when changing the roof complexity from $80,000 to $100,000 for the same roof with different level of complexities.
That's a big change.
A huge change, yes. So, of course, it's going to be different for everyone. The price changes per market. Also, those prices that Tesla quotes you on the online configurators are not final prices. The final prices go through a different process and everything. It's just to give you an estimate. But I think that would give people a second thought if they go on the website and they get priced that kind of situation. I mean, that's what we were seeing from Tesla with the first version of the solar roof. The V3 version reduced the price a lot, but now it looks like we're back up to the kind of pricing I would have liked. Of course, that's another situation that I would have liked to talk to Tesla about it, see what's up, what's happening here. Is that actual the price that I would get charged for that roof? But no PR department anymore. We're not going to get into that again. All right, now something that is both in the world of 95 Mac and electric. Apple this week, they announced a few of their new initiatives to help achieve their goal of being net carbon neutral throughout their operation by 2030. And that involved a big new energy storage project that they're building next to their solar farm in, I think it's in Monterey County in North California. So, the project, they had a PR press release about it, and it's a pretty big project, a 240 megawatt hour energy storage project. So it's even bigger than Tesla's famous big battery in South Australia. That was for a long time was the biggest battery system in the world. So it's even bigger this time. 130 megawatt solar farm that's going to get 240 megawatt hours of energy storage. What they didn't say in their press release, though, and that we're going to credit The Verge here for finding documents about it, was in the building application, Apple actually disclosed that they're using Tesla Megapacks. So they're going to buy the batteries from Tesla to get that project going. And it's going to be a significant project. Like I said, 240 megawatt hours. We know that the Megapacks is priced between 200 to 300 kilowatt an hour. $200 to $300 per kilowatt hour, depending on a bunch of different factors, what kind of power electronics you get included in it and everything. But that would put the price likely over $50 million that Apple is actually going to buy from Tesla. Of course, that's peanuts for Apple, but still, I think it's an interesting project for them to partner on because, as you might know, it's not a great relationship between the two. It's more like a rivalry between Tesla and Apple.
They've gone at it a few times. Apple's been hiring away Tesla people. Elon's called Apple Tesla's graveyard. There was an acquisition attempt, I guess, or Elon wanted to sell to Apple and Tim Cook didn't take the call, which yeah. which was like all like not that far back, like in the Model
2018 3 days. 2018, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. now Tesla is becoming like almost bigger than Apple. Not quite yet, but even since the team, it's going that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting, like, especially in the context that Apple is now working on batteries and everything, and they're using Tesla's expertise now for this one. Of course, Apple is more looking into batteries for their electric vehicles, their upcoming electric vehicle, and their consumer electronics, of course. But those are not exactly the same kind of specs that you need in terms of battery packs. They're not looking at stationary storage. Tesla already has such a great lead right now that they were the go-to choice for this project. All right. Now we're going to move away from Tesla with a few other news items to discuss. But if you guys have any question, put them in the comment right now, in the comment section, because in the next probably 15 minutes or so, we're going to get to them and try to respond as many questions as possible. It can be on the stories that we're discussing today. It can be on anything else in the EV world that we can discuss. All right, Rivian. So last month, Rivian had their big like charging infrastructure announcement. And we discussed how close to Tesla it was with the Rivian Adventure Network sounding a lot like the Supercharger Network, and then their Rivian Waypoint Network sounding just like the Tesla Destination Charger Network. But now Rivian keeps unveiling more of its infrastructure plans around its electric vehicles since they're coming out in the next few months. So they want to reassure the reservation holders that they're going to get a good ownership experience beyond just a great vehicle. And again, last month was charging infrastructure. This month, it's service plan for the R1T and R1S. And once again, it sounds just like Tesla. So it's like a four-prong type of plan for service. They're going to do mobile service. So they're going to send technician in vans to perform most of the service. Also, they're going to have remote diagnostic using the vehicle's connectivity features. For the services that is too big for the van, they're still going to have service center, and they're going to be company-owned service centers in the U.S. and Canada, just like Tesla. They're not going to go through third-party franchise dealerships to perform service. And also, they're going with an app for the scheduling. So basically, it's just like Tesla. If you're familiar with the Tesla service experience, the Rivian one shouldn't be too big of a change for you. So in terms of a few numbers, they're planning 40 Rivian service centers in the US and Canada within the coming year. They gave us a little sneak peek at the app here, which is pretty straightforward. So you make an appointment where it's going to be, if it's a service, a mobile service appointment or the service center. And that's pretty much it. But I did some digging because, of course, when we looked into their charging plan, and we were like, this is basically just like this Tesla's charging plan. And sure enough, most of the charging people at Rivian came from Tesla. Same thing going on with the service here. The head of the mobile service, the head of service operation, Noe Maija, came from Tesla. He's been at Tesla 7 years, and he was the head of service there too. Then you have Savaya Biro, senior manager of mobile operations. They used to do the same thing at Tesla. And I found a bunch of others in the same situation. Like, they had the exact same job at Tesla just a few months ago, and now they are at Rivian building the service thing, which again, I don't think it's a bad thing. I'm just pointing it out as a matter of fact here, of saying that I'm not crazy to think that this sounds a lot like Tesla service. It's literally the same people that designed that are now at Rivian. But if you, I mean, I had my issue with Tesla service before. Seth, you had too. And I think like most longtime Tesla owners have had hit or misses experiences with Tesla service. But if I was to venture on doing like a little survey between all Tesla owners, and I would ask a simple question of, do you prefer the Tesla service experience, or do you prefer the service experience of the best experience that you had with a third party dealership? And I think the vast majority would say Tesla.
Yeah. And I think actually like JD Power or somebody, maybe Consumer Reports, did that exact survey. And I think Tesla topped the charts on that one.
I mean, I remember them doing a survey for that for the sell side of things. Like for sell side, they said that the Tesla employees were a lot better than I don't remember them saying that for survey, but I wouldn't be too surprised either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's but a low bar to be set. Like yeah. Car dealers are pretty bad, notoriously bad, and everybody does everything they can to avoid them. So you know, if you're Rivian, if you're gonna pick somebody to copy, Tesla's a pretty good one to copy.
Yeah, that's what I said for the supercharger plans. I mean, supercharger is the best network. You should definitely copy that. For the service, I wouldn't go with third party dealership. I would like it just makes sense to own your own service experience. Like it makes so much sense. Like there was a reason why the third party system existed. Like in a time where the infrastructure for cars were booming so much, like it just didn't exist at all, and it made a lot of sense to franchise it so that it can grow faster. But nowadays, it's not so useful. Now, for the service aspect of it, saying that it makes sense to copy Tesla, I'd still say for the most part, like the mobile service, I had great experience with Tesla's mobile service and made a lot of sense. So yes, copy that all the way. The app base, and I just look at the comment real quick, and sure enough, there's someone that mentioned it. Donald Cooper says, "Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Tesla's app service." Yes, I mean, when it works great, but also the fact that it's harder to contact someone at the service centers instead of just going through the app is not, it's a hit or miss issue. If I give the example of when my Model S didn't work at all. My mom was driving it and she drove it home. And by the time as she was driving home, the car was telling her that if she stops, the car might not start again. And sure enough, she managed to get home. But once she stopped, she couldn't start the car again. And we needed service. And you go through the app. Like, that's the only way, basically. Like, I don't need roadside assistance because the car is home. But I need, I need service fast. Like, we don't have a car. The car is useless right now. And you go through the service app and it's telling you, like, 2 weeks of waiting. Like, there's no, like, I need, like, an urgent thing. It's not, I don't need to service my tire or something. I don't need, like, to rebalance my tire. I need a car right now. So, like, I need a loaner. I need something. And, yeah, it was hard to contact, actually, someone at Tesla other than the roadside service, which couldn't do anything. So, for that, you want to talk to someone. And I think a lot of people had the same experience with that. All right, now Kia unveiled the EV6. So that's their new electric vehicle coming up later this year. And so spec-wise, we there's nothing surprising because the vehicle is using the same platform as the Hyundai Ioniq 5 that was unveiled not so long ago. And we were very impressed by that. So all the powertrains and everything, it's the same thing on this car. So it's basically the Ioniq 5, but repackaged more of a crossover looking vehicle, I would say. Or would you even call that a crossover?
Did they
call
it? Yeah, looks more like a sedan ish. I guess like a tall sedan or like a shooting brake even.
With a hatchback, yeah. I think they call it a crossover at Kia.
They're calling everything a crossover these days, though.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's a versatile term, right. Crossover. But yeah, so all the sweet things that we liked from the Ioniq 5. So the main thing that we liked about the Ioniq 5 is the configurations. Like you get two battery pack options. You get each battery pack get two motor configuration options. So you basically get four options for the car. So there's something for everyone. If you don't need too much range, if you need range but you don't need all-wheel drive, like there's something for everyone here. You can configure something that makes sense for you. So you have all that with the EV6, and more specifically, it's a 58 kilowatt hour battery pack and 77.4 kilowatt hour. You still get the 800 volt system, 250 kilowatt charging, all that sweet stuff. Over 510 kilometers on the WLTP cycle. I didn't see the EPA estimates, but I would definitely believe it if it's over 250, even maybe closer to 300. But yeah, the big difference again is this tiding here. And I don't know about you, but I'm a fan. I mean, I like the Ioniq 5 a lot, but this one is almost making me think, I don't know which one I like better.
Yeah, this is nice. I mean, it's clearly a lot longer. Like, the wheelbase is longer. Mm-hmm. It's like a... I feel like the Ioniq 5 is more of a... I don't know. I don't want to say a two-seater, because it's obviously not, but it seems a lot shorter. This is going to be a different kind of drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it a lot.
Same. And you know, the battery pack and all the extras that go along with it are pretty cool.
Here's a quick look at the interior here.
Which also looks a little similar to the Ioniq 5.
Yeah, I mean, the seats look very much like sports seats with giant side supports here. I like
the, is this the final form, or is this...
I think so, because I think it's coming later this year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's different than the Ioniq, though, you get a GT version of it. The GT version is equipped with 430 kilowatt of motor capacity, dual motor, giving you a 0 to 100 kilometer an hour in 3.5 seconds.
Pretty speedy.
So, yeah, so that's pretty good. We don't know the price of it yet, so I would assume, like, because you get so many configuration of the EV6, just like the Ioniq 5, I think they're gonna go for like a catchy base price on it, on the 58 kilowatt hour rear motor configuration, like something maybe close to $40,000, something like that. But then if you want a fully equipped one, I wouldn't be surprised if you're closer to 60, especially if you have that GT version here. But that wouldn't be necessarily bad, like a kind of something maybe in between the Model 3 and Model Y performance would be interesting.
Yeah, and obviously Kia still has some of those $7,500 tax credits, which Tesla and GM are uncertain about at the moment.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, let's maybe jump to that right now, actually, because I want to talk about it. It's the Biden administration released their infrastructure plans, and within it, they released some kind of summary of their electric vehicle investment plan, and they're putting aside $174 billion for electric vehicles, which is great.
Yep.
But when they didn't go into too many details on how that's going to be spent, of course, the biggest thing that people, electric vehicle buyers, are waiting for is what kind of incentive they're planning to do. And when it comes to incentive, they say that there was some very important point. It will give consumers point of sale rebates and tax incentive to buy American-made EVs. So two important things here. Point of sales rebate. So though there's still mention of tax incentive, but there was the Green Act was one of the solutions that was proposed by the Democrats over the last few months. And it included a point of sales rebate. So it included a $7,500 replacing the tax credit with a point of sale rebate, which is, of course, a lot easier for everyone. It's just you don't have to take out the money, really. Because right now, if you want to buy a car that has access to the $7,500 federal rebate, you need $7,500 of tax burden at the federal level. And then you need to spend that $7,500 on the car. And then when your rebate comes with your taxes the following year, that's when you get the money. So, of course, not having that money for a period of time is has a financial cost. So you don't have that anymore, and you don't need the tax burden either. So that's two pluses right there.
Yeah.
But the other big thing, of course, and that's what I wanted to talk about it, as you mentioned, the Kia EV6 having access to the federal tax credit. It's clear that they say American-made EVs, so it sounds like the incentive is going to come with kind of a protectionist approach where it's only going to be and very much like in China, it's only going to be from the vehicles that are made there. So not necessarily made by American companies, but made in the U.S. So right. this can be instance, problematic for Kia.
Yeah.
Well, VW, at least they are coming up with their own American production of EVs in Chattanooga. So while it could be a problem for them this year, not so much next year. So I don't think they're going to be panicking about that. But actually, if you want to talk about American companies, one that could be panicking is Ford. Because that Mach-E is built in Mexico. And I think they just greenlitted a new electric car to also be built in Mexico. They're going to be safe for the F-150 that's going to be made in the U.S., the electric version I'm talking about.
Yep.
But for them, it could hurt.
Or it could make them switch. Hopefully somebody at Ford's thinking ahead here. And because we got some communication from an Ohio Ford plant. The Ford union in Ohio was saying that the decision had been made to move the next EV to Mexico, but maybe they're going to reconsider that decision if this goes through.
Yeah, I think it's certainly significant enough for them to reconsider those decisions. But for the Mach-E, though, it's already pretty much a done deal. Like they already invested millions and millions of dollars to produce it there. So unless they decide to change that, it's going to be harder for them to sell without that $7,500 difference. Though I say 75, that's what the Green Act was talking about. And so we don't know exactly the actual end result of that initiative here. But it's certainly, I think it's going to go through, or at least a version of it is going to go through very likely with the political landscape right now in the U.S. with the Democrats holding the House and the White House and the Senate, but we don't know exactly the version of it. So it's certainly something to keep an eye on, because I think it would have a massive impact on the EV market in the U.S. for the next few years. There's a few other things in there. They're talking about providing incentive and grants to the private sector to build 500,000 more EV chargers by 2030. Again, not too many details about that. There's, like, we know that a lot of governments in the past have wrongly encouraged too much, like level 2 chargers and things like that, when they should be spending more money on fast charging. So hopefully they get that right. There are also plans to help transit vehicles go electric. Very good news on that front. Buses, school buses also getting in the federal fleet, of course, with the USPS, which we discussed a few weeks ago, the announcement that only a small percentage of their fleet is going electric with the fleet update. And we know that the Biden administration is trying to stop that and transition to full electric fleet sooner for the post office. But yeah, we're gonna keep a close eye on that and electric over the next few weeks as the story develops. All right, finally, last story of the day, then we're gonna get into the comments. So make sure to put your comments in the comment section before in the next few minutes as we get to them. The Mercedes-Benz has unveiled the interior of the EQS. A lot of automakers have been doing that lately, and I'm not sure how big of a fan I am of this. I get it that maybe because of there's no in-person unveiling anymore, so they're trying to adjust and change a little bit the way they unveil their cars. But a lot of them have been unveiling the interior first or the exterior first or vice versa, and then before actually unveiling the full car. So we don't have the production exterior styling of the EQS yet, and they also didn't reveal the specs. All they did is reveal most of the interior as well as some interior experience features, if you will, including that giant screen here, which is like one big 55-inch piece, but it's not like a full screen. There's three like decent-sized screen in it, like a passenger screen, a center console screen, and an instrument cluster. There's still a few physical buttons on it and everything, so they didn't go full Tesla, but pretty close.
You never want to go full Tesla.
A few more pictures here. It's clean looking. It's very clean looking. Like, it's actually not too Mercedes looking, because Mercedes is a bit... I'm not always a big fan of their interior. It's like kind of busy.
A lot of buttons.
Yeah, a lot of buttons, a lot of features, a lot of details. I think this one looks a lot cleaner to me, like at least the cabin experience. There's this giant fans here. Like, they look very robust. We have a quick look at the back seat here. We have a nice little screen. I didn't actually see that here. Nice little screen in the back here, and the dark look. No, I like it. I'm a big fan.
It's hard to find fault with it. It looks pretty cool. It actually reminds me a little bit of the Cadillac Lyric, because they're doing the big screen all the way across as well.
Yeah. They call it the hyper screen.
Got to pay the marketing guys.
Yeah. A lot of AI features inside the car. They say that the car is going to try to guess what you're going to want to do next and everything, so that they're going to push those options to you in order to just make the experience smoother. They're talking, we didn't release any images yet, but they're talking about using a new heads-up display system that gives you a 77-inch field of view. Again, I'm a big fan of those, and I think, especially when we're at the cusp, I think of like the heads-up display now are becoming like so good that they actually had a lot of value to the driving experience. Again, one of my gripes with Tesla that they haven't introduced that. But also they went with a high efficiency particulate hair filter in the car, just like Tesla and the Model S and X. They have that HEPA filter that they say can remove 99.65% of particles, eliminate them. So similar to Tesla's
bioweapons defense
mode. Biodefensive weapon mode.
Yeah. I feel like Tesla's marketing guys might have won that battle.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds a lot better than a high particulate hair filter.
Right.
All right. Let's get into the comments now.
All righty. All the way before we started, Coach DA says, any inside info on the Model S and X ramp?
Yeah, I mean, we know that Tesla hasn't delivered any this quarter. So the 2,000 vehicles delivered were all previous generation. So there's been a holdup for sure. I don't know if it's a production holdup or if it's with the testing. Tesla did comment today with the release of the production and delivery numbers that they are currently ramping it up. So, I mean, I would definitely expect some deliveries this quarter.
All could many, also be I'm not software sure. too.
Yeah, like a flashback to Volkswagen. But I wouldn't be surprised actually that you'd be right, because we know that they need a different experience for it, for the software with the new screen and the back screen and everything. So yeah, that makes sense.
All right. Thoughts on the current EV environment? ID.4, Mach-E, Polestar 2, Audi e-tron all look very promising until you see how many they plan to make. I would argue that the ID.4 Volkswagen plans to make quite a few of those. The Polestar and e-tron are pretty small. And the Mach-E, somewhere in the middle, they plan to make a few, but not quite as many as Volkswagen with the ID.4.
Well, Audi e-tron, like, I know we often look at that, like how many cars they plan to produce, but for the e-tron, I think they've been selling like as much as the as they could sell. Like it is a more expensive SUV. Like it's not at the Mach-E or ID.4 kind of price range. But I just posted today that the Q1 numbers in the US are kind of impressive. They're pretty good. They sold over 3,000 of them, which is like 100% increase over last year, and of course in 2021. Version got a big price decrease, so now you can get the e-tron in the US for less than $60,000, which is competitive, because it's not like it's a little bit bigger than the Model Y, it's a bit smaller than the Model X, and it's right in between in terms of pricing. So
and we know those do well in places like Norway. Jonathan Root says Tesla stocks paying for my Cybertruck. That's fantastic. No Cybertruck.
I mean, lately it shouldn't. Lately it hasn't been that great, but
he probably got in a little
good
bit
for
later.
You. Yeah.
Maybe a better idea to keep the stock and finance the truck.
No, financial advice in the YouTube comments. Right, always the best financial advice come from YouTube comments.
The long Tesla folks. All right. Tesla is on a pace to sell 1 million cars in 2021.
Technically, no.
not at the moment.
That's literally they're not on pace to get a million cars. They're going to increase the pace. They're on pace to increase that pace to reach a million cars, but they would have to have sold 250,000 cars in the first quarter to be on pace, which they're...
You kind of have to go to the slope of the curve. Mm-hmm. All right. Spikes 43. I think the lack of door handles discussed last week on Cybertruck could be compensated for by side cameras and self-presenting door should work better than the X and the key sensing.
Oh, that's a good point. So I think what Spikes is saying here is like when Tesla introduced the self-presenting door in the Model X, it was pre-level 2. Autopilot 2.0 with the sense the cameras on the sides. So I think what he's saying here is like now with they could develop a new self-presenting door that use the cameras instead of just the sensors. Actually, wasn't it just Bluetooth? Didn't it just use Bluetooth for the self-presenting door? I think so. So they just knew that you were coming, and then they would self-present. I mean that's a possibility. Though I'm not sure. Like we know that Tesla running like Sentry mode, for example, if you keep Sentry mode running, it takes a lot of energy. So running the cameras to detect if someone is self-presenting, I'm not sure it's going to be the way to go. But interesting thought, nonetheless.
Yeah, and when I had a Model X with the self-presenting doors, we would keep our keys upstairs in our bedroom, and they would present all night. Mm. Depending on, you know, how close they were. All right. So next question, Miles Davis. Not sure if it's been covered since, but we was discussed on the podcast a few weeks ago. The Model S Plaid customers still paying the agreed reservation price increase. So I'm not sure if that's a question, but
no. We just want to let people know.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you reserve one, Miles? Good for you.
With Tesla beating record highs in deliveries, can you guys make a story about Goodwill fixes under warranty issues? I've been dealing with my Lemon Model 3 since the end of 2018.
I mean, Goodwill fixes under warranty issues. I'm not sure what you mean by that. I mean, if it's a Lemon, you have Lemon laws that you could force Tesla to take back the vehicle. I mean, I wouldn't need to know the details in this case to know if it would fit Goodwill repairs.
Yeah, and sometimes if you ask a dealership, they'll throw you a bone.
Mm-hmm.
I love Tesla, but it's important to keep them in check regarding the issue.
We try to do that. So.
Yeah. Can anyone buy a Tesla Semi, or do you have to be a company?
Yeah, anyone. You can go on the website right now, and you cannot buy it, but you can order one.
Nobody can buy a Tesla Semi.
Yeah, but you can order it if you have a $20,000 deposit to put on it.
Yeah, I think we know some people who have done that. Mm-hmm. When do you think we'll see a Honda Cub Electric? Surely that will be print money if Honda ever decides to release. Cheers.
What's the Cub again?
That's the one that Micah had. It's like the most popular vehicle in the history of the world.
Oh, like a moped, right?
Yeah. It's half moped, half motorcycle. It's about, I think they've sold over a billion of them.
Is the one that Micah is making electric? Yeah?
Yes.
Although I think that project has been on hold for a while. But
yeah, too much travel.
That's a question for Micah. If he had a podcast, he could answer it.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. We've been trying to get Micah to do a podcast.
I think they should. I think they'll have to because there's a... We've done a couple reviews of similar vehicles. What is that? The CC Monterey? There's a bike called the Monterey that is basically, it looks like a Honda Cub, but it's electric. And it's got really good specs and it's not too expensive. It's like $2,000. So pretty hot little vehicle. Check it out.
Yeah, I know it's not the same price range, but you've seen the BMW. They're bringing their new scooter to like a version of the C-Volution, but like a new version of it. That thing looks hot.
Yeah,
but I'm sure it's going to be crazy expensive, man.
The Now You Know YouTube guys ordered a Tesla Semi.
What are they going to do with that? I'm sure they're going to do like an RV or something. Like most, that's what a lot of people are doing to buy one personally.
Yeah. So we were kind of like, this is a digression, but we were kind of looking at a double-decker bus to be like the electric vehicle to go to shows and have events for. It was
BYD.
BYD is making those. So that'd be kind of cool. But they came back to us with the price and it's $1 million. So not this year.
Yeah.
All right. Philip Lavoie with a two-parter. Question one. What do you think about the rumors we heard this week that Tesla might begin Cybertruck trial production in June of this year?
I mean, doesn't mean anything to me. Like, like I said, I would be shocked if Tesla produces Cybertruck in more than a handful this year. And trial production doesn't mean anything in terms of deliveries. Like, Tesla's going to have to test that vehicle too, guys. And,
right.
And
I mean, they're clearly building, you know, versions of that thing.
The prototypes version of that thing. So if they do some trial production, that's nice. But those vehicles are going to be on the roads for months and months and months before there's any customer delivery. So, and also keep in mind that we're expecting that the Cybertruck to be a little bit more difficult to get approved to on the roads because of its nature. You're going to have to send a few crash vehicles too. So, yeah, don't get excited about some kind of June rumor or anything like that. Trial production in June. Like, it's doesn't mean necessarily car this year. Listen to Elon Musk. Like, Elon Musk is one of the most optimistic person in the world when it comes to timelines. We can all agree on that.
Right.
Lately, he's been a little bit better. Sometimes he under promises and over delivers. Okay. But historically, speaking, the guy is super optimistic on timelines. And even him, he says that Tesla would be lucky if they can produce some Cybertruck this year, most likely next year. So let's stick to that.
Yeah, and then he continued with that pilot production would be in Fremont, and then June there would be trial production in Austin. I guess that makes sense.
Makes sense because that's what we just reported for the Tesla Semi, so it would be on par for Tesla these days to just do some pilot production and then ramp up to a bigger production line.
All right. Let's see. When is the 2020 Roadster coming out?
Never. I think it's going to be a 2022 Roadster now.
Yeah. Sadly. We're both obviously looking forward to that a little bit more than any other car because theoretically, there's some referrals out there for us. Mm. Eric Perez, looks like Tim Cook will order 240 megawatts of solar storage for Apple soon. Well, we just reported on that, so maybe that's past tense.
Okay, now Larry changed it to when the 2022 Roadster is coming out. Yeah, I mean, in 2022, probably. Or maybe it's going to be even 2023 Roadster at this point. I don't know. But I don't think it's going to be 20. When I say 2022, I don't think it's going to be like when an automaker release.
It's just late such 2021. A not low-hanging fruit for them. Like, like there's so many more opportunities out there, but they kind of have to do it at some point.
Yeah. I mean, they sold a bunch of it. Like, forget the one for the reservation orders, the referral. Like, if you weren't one of the people that put $250,000 down to get the Founder Series, that was in 2017.
I can't imagine anybody still in that boat. They probably refunded at least $200,000.
Well, I've heard that. So at one point, one person reached out to me. He's like, hey, I got a Tesla, just reached out to me and gave me my money back for the Founder Series. I'm like, oh, wow. So I tried to confirm that with someone else. Never been able to confirm it. So.
Jonathan Brown loves his Audi e-tron. That's great to hear. He should have ordered 420 megawatts, higher priority. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. All right. Exoskeleton Tesla CT should be awesome. I was just thinking about that. You mentioned the crash test of the Cybertruck. That'll be pretty interesting to watch because you have those like load-bearing steel exoskeleton. Like, what's going to happen? Is that they're just going to fly apart or something?
I don't know, man. But
and then
I
mean, the glass?
Tesla is good at safety, like passive safety. Like, they're very good at passive safety. So
I would really like to, like, I'm really curious what that's going to look like.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the crumple zones and like the bulletproof glass. Like, what's going to happen? Like,
so for all the gadget that Tesla does, I mean, the passive safety drives a lot of the design and a lot of the engineering of Tesla vehicles. So with them going with an exoskeleton type of thing, like I think they can do something pretty awesome with that in terms of safety.
All right, Jonathan Brown, also a fan of the Kia EV6, stating the obvious, freaking awesome. Ioniq 5, freaking awesome. Yep.
How much are gonna be able to do though? Like the because the same platform, they're using the Ioniq 5 and the EV6. So the two brands are splitting the volume for that platform. So I would like Hyundai to just go all out with and produce a lot of those because I think they could sell a lot of EV6 and Ioniq 5.
For sure. Seattle Vienna says, could Tesla produce 1 million vehicles this year?
I think it's very likely at this point because like we discussed this quarter, if there wasn't from some of the issues and the new Model S and X, they probably would have produced over 200,000 of them. And with the second half, with Tesla is likely to have like, I don't know how many, but at least a few tens of thousands of production units in Berlin and Texas for the Model Y. So it's definitely possible.
All right. Spike 43 says, my theory on the roof is that they were hoping to get some cost savings in the lining and other aspects of the roof, which did not work out. And now the price is back up.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, not sure. Love the instant torque. In 5 years, everybody's buying electric. Who's buying new? What a hoot. All right. Mm-hmm. Same page. What is the 25,000 Tesla?
That's the $25,000 Tesla we're talking about.
Yeah. We always get a question about that.
I mean, it's been a while since Tesla unveiled a new car. Huh?
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
So, yeah, I mean, in China, I think once they're done with the Model Y, that's their next car.
Yeah, that's what seems likely. And we know Tesla is expanding in Shanghai right now, so it's pending in preparation for the production of that car, but that could still take a year or two to get there. And Tesla nowadays, I mean, Cybertruck aside, maybe they tried to unveil a car, bring a car to production, not unveil a vehicle not too long before the production starts. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like later this year.
Shane Sullivan says, I wonder how much LG Chem are having an input into the Kia Hyundai new drivetrain. I believe they had a lot of input into the Kona. Recently, LG's had some issues with the Hyundai and Kia's battery packs catching fire. So it's a double-edged sword there. Hopefully that gets resolved and they've got a new, better pack and design. Mm-hmm. LG obviously had a lot to do with the Chevy Bolt too. So it'll be interesting to see. Yep, it's a station wagon. I believe that was talking about the
pretty sexy station wagon. I haven't seen a station wagon that I like that much in a long time.
Well, what about the Taycan?
Yeah, yeah, that, fair point. Though a lot of people don't like the Taycan Cross.
I would take one.
Cross Turismo.
Yeah. Porsche is listening. I like it. I like it a lot. Ioniq 6 holdout here. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to do 5, 6, 7, I think, something like that.
Right. Let's go down. Everyone is going to be buying tax credits from Tesla for the next decade. All right. Tiger Woods must have bought FSD in Tesla in Q1. Now that's a good one.
Yeah, you got an accident.
Tiger's okay.
Apparently it was a bad one.
Okay. All right. Ford is going bankrupt this decade.
I wouldn't necessarily bet on that. But
it's not going to be a great decade for Ford, probably. Yeah. Which legacy car company do you guys think has the highest chance of not making the EV transition?
You can't even pronounce their name, so how are they going to make it? But whatever came out of the FCA, PSA merger.
Yeah,
these guys.
Pretty
these
good. Guys Mazda's are, not doing too well.
And you know what? Toyota too, and like I just reported today on the Aria. Like we haven't heard of update about the Aria in months, and now Nissan sent me a press release, and I start writing about it, and I bored myself to sleep writing about the Aria because we've been waiting too long for it. I feel like that now it's like not exciting anymore.
Yeah, they should have heard too early, or they were too slow in getting it out the door.
Yeah, I mean the decade between the Leaf and the Aria makes no sense whatsoever.
All right. Recommendations for the best electric bicycle under $1,000. I will quickly just put in the Rad Mission is pretty good. The Electric, not Electric. If you like Fat Tire foldables, is also nice.
The Fido one, I tried in Los Angeles. The Fido one was pretty good too. I mean, right now, yeah. I just got myself two very nice Carbo, and they're not $1,000. They're a little bit more expensive than that. But if you can spend the money on it, they are pretty awesome. They're very well built, and the specs are perfect for just about any kind of commuting on bicycle.
Yeah, and Electric's e-bike of the year last year was the Juiced Hyper Scorpion, but that's closer to 2000.
Yeah.
All right. The 4680 is about to destroy the competition. Are we talking about batteries here?
I mean, I don't know that, like, if you listen to Tesla, it would, like, 50% drop. But that 50% drop that they're talking about in pricing, it's once they reach, like, high volume production. It's not going to happen until another 2 years, probably. So by that time, I think a lot of other batteries are going to be competitive, too, in pricing. But we'll see.
All right. Clinton DeSevo said, I talked to four Ford dealers. They said Mach-E was sold out and nothing else coming back to dealers until 2022. That would be interesting.
Yeah. Maybe you can look into that.
Eric Perez says, I like how Dodge is avoiding the EV market altogether. They'll stay profitable for decades to come back. Come because nothing beats the sound of raw horsepower. LOL. Detecting a little sarcasm there.
Yeah.
People love to talk about Tesla killers, but how can someone take over if they don't make enough supply? That's a good question. I think Tesla could announce a new Gigafactory this year. Yeah, whatever happened to the one that was supposed to go in like West Virginia or something? I feel like that was...
Yeah, a new East Coast one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that never came up. Huh?
Yeah. Maybe they bought Bitcoin instead.
Let's do one in Canada. Let's do the East Coast one in Canada.
Yeah, sure.
We have in Shawinigan is becoming a hub of electric vehicles now. Is Taiga that announced in a factory there recently, and they already producing charging station and everything.
Yeah, do they need? I'm in Florida now. Do they need any watercraft reviewed? I could certainly get a jet ski.
I know they've been focusing more on the snowmobile lately, but yeah, I mean, you're not there, man. I'll check with them.
All right. I can see what Toyota stands to gain by reaching out to Tesla for a partnership, but what does Tesla stand to gain?
All right. So Eric here is referencing a report that came out earlier this week that I didn't want to report on at first because it sounded as weak as a report as it gets. It was from once. It was a report from Korea with one single unnamed source in the industry that said that Toyota and Tesla are discussing making an electric SUV, and that Toyota would be making the electric powertrain, the electric platform, and Tesla would be supplying software. So I was like, I'm not even want to touch that. Like, this sounds too weak. Like, there's not much credibility to it. But then a bunch of publications just ran with it. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to report on it with some context and some, like, people get that there's a grain of salt to it. Because look, Tesla, there's some value to it. There's some, context to it that makes sense in terms of Tesla and Toyota having a partnership before. So it's not too out of the, not impossible to think that they could have one again, but you have to remember what the partnership was like before, and that partnership was solely due to Toyota trying to reach compliance with the CARB emission standard in California. That's why they saw it as a cheap way to do it. They said, oh, we're going to throw some money Tesla's way. They're going to help us. And again, Tesla was going to supply the power, was supplying the powertrain for the RAV4 EV. So, and then they hit the emission standard anyway. The emission standard slowed down and everything. They killed that partnership with Tesla. They sold all their share in 2017, which was a big mistake. And that's it. And Toyota has been extremely anti-battery electric vehicles since. So now to come back around and go to Tesla again and do the other way around where they would be building the powertrain and Tesla would be supplying the software. I just don't see it. I don't think it's very likely. And the report didn't have enough weight to it, I think, to make sense.
All right. We have one last two-part question from Shane O'Sullivan. Wonder how much of Carlos Ghosn's departure from Nissan Renault had knocked out their EV momentum. He was a huge driver for electrified in the organization. And then Japanese car makers in general seem to be very behind in the EV world. Honda, Toyota, Mazda, and now Nissan falling behind.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, I mean, I would love to sit down with Carlos and talk. Like, I mean, I know that everyone wants to sit down with Carlos and discuss how he evaded the authorities in Japan and flew to Lebanon. Like, it's a crazy story. But I would definitely get into that if I had an interview with him. But I want to get his perspective of what happens with Nissan's EV plans after the Leaf. Because, I mean, we all remember the Revenge of the Electric Car movie where he was like pushing hard for the Leaf and Nissan was becoming this sort of early leader in the electrification movement. And then Carlos ended up stepping down from Nissan's role as a CEO and became just chairman and then focused more on Renault in Paris. And then nothing from Nissan on electrification for years and years and years. And of course, then he gets kicked out of Nissan over this alleged fraud. But yeah, I mean, I don't know the facts, but there's a part of me that believes for some reason, and I have nothing to back this up, but there's a part of me for some reason that believe that Carlos was pushing hard for electrification and Nissan wanted nothing to do with it and they got a way to kick him out of there.
Maybe electrification was the impetus for his departure.
I mean, again, I have no proof of that whatsoever.
After he was gone, there was a big turn away from electrification.
Like, I mean, not only when, well, I mean, that whole thing happened in 2019, 2020. So it's kind of recent, but Carlos was kind of being pushed away from Nissan for a while before that. I don't remember when he stepped down from the role of CEO there, but I think it was a few years before the whole saga happened. Crazy thing.
It is curious, though, that none of the Japanese car makers seem to be kind of leading in the EV world these days. I mean, a lot of them are doing hydrogen. Yeah. Which doesn't seem like a great long-term strategy. And a lot of them think that hybrids are kind of the way to go initially.
Yeah, I mean, Nissan itself, just like Toyota, has had a bit of a hybrid thing for a long time. They had this e-Power thing that they're doing now. Right. They claim it's an electric car that charges itself. Like Toyota did the same. Similar marketing with the Lexus hybrid. Like I don't understand it. I mean, because they didn't, like, Shane has a good point. Like, all the Japanese automakers seems to be behind with electrification, but not all of them went all in with the hydrogen like Toyota did. Like Toyota, the whole story behind Toyota makes sense. They screwed up. Like they thought hydrogen would be the thing. They did the Mare. They spent $1 billion on the Mare and flopped. And so now they're trying to catch up and they tried to slow down everybody else so they could catch up by lobbying against battery electric vehicles. Like that, it's a terrible thing to do. But I mean, business wise, I get what they're doing. But the other ones like Subaru and Mazda, like I don't get as much. Though I know that Toyota has influence on them ownership wise, and
yeah,
Mazda too. Does Toyota have an ownership in Mazda?
I don't know about Mazda, but I know Subaru drivetrains are with Toyota.
Repeat that, please.
I know Subaru has a drivetrain deal with Toyota. So
yeah, just googling Mazda ownership real quick.
All right, that's it. That's pretty much all the questions.
Yeah, Toyota owns 5% of it, which is nothing crazy. But yeah, that's it for the show this week, everyone. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and wherever we are right now. If you like the show, and only if you like it, we do appreciate a thumbs up and a subscribe to know whenever it's coming back. It's, we love to see those numbers going up. It's fun to see the EV community grow around Electrek. We love it. If you're listening on your podcast app, you can give us a subscribe too, to download the next episode whenever it comes out, generally late on Fridays or early on Saturdays. But we are always live at 4 p.m. Eastern time. And on Fridays. So check us out same time next week. And stay safe. Have fun.